So imagine you're the captain of a vessel, right? And you are steering through this incredibly dense, unpredictable fog.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare already.
Yeah, exactly. And you might have like the most accurate map in the entire world sitting right there on your dashboard. But if your ship's intercom is broken,
Right, if you can't talk to the crew.
exactly. If every time you try to communicate, it comes out as this screeching static, or worse, you're accidentally broadcasting false coordinates, you are going to crash.
You're completely isolated at that point.
Right. The actual mechanics of steering simply do not matter if your communication network has completely failed.
That is honestly the perfect way to visualize the stakes here. I mean, if you can't coordinate, you can't correct your course.
Yeah.
And you certainly can't, ask for help when the water gets rough.
Which is exactly why we're here. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today for you, the listener, is to explore how we use our voice, both out loud in the world and inside our own heads.
Because that inner voice is just as important.
Oh, absolutely. We're looking at how to utilize that voice to reduce harm, build deep trust, and basically navigate life's inevitable challenges without constantly running ourselves aground.
And we were pulling this protocol directly from the RAV program, right?
We are. Specifically, we're zeroing in on Chapter 59, which is titled Skillful Speech.
Which is arguably one of the most transformative chapters in the whole material.
Yeah.
Just to give you a sense of where this fits into the broader picture, the RAS program is built around a progressive framework.
Right. And RAFT is an acronym, which is just pronounced RAF. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feeling, Train.
Exactly. And the chapter we're examining today sits squarely in that final stage, the train stage.
Which marks a pretty massive pivot in the journey, doesn't it? I mean, up until this stage, the work feels highly internal.
Yeah, very introspective. You're observing your urges, feeling the emotional currents, that sort of thing.
Right, but hitting train means we are taking all that internal realization and pushing it outward. We're externalizing it into a tangible protocol for how we actually relate to other human beings.
You're finally moving from the laboratory out into the wild, and the text grounds this whole transition with a foundational quote from Gotama, the Buddha.
Oh, I love this quote.
It's so good. He advised, "Speak not harshly to anyone. Spoken to, they may answer you in kind."
It's just a profound recognition that speech isn't, it's not just a passive expression of whatever happens to be floating around in your head.
Right. Speech is an active, reactive force.
If you dump harshness into the environment is going to bounce that exact same harshness right back at your hull.
Yeah, it frames skillful speech as a proactive tool, not just some restrictive list of don'ts.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit because the text breaks this down into a two-part movement. It's about abandoning and cultivating.
Right. You can't just have one without the other.
Exactly. So we have to abandon four main harmful patterns: false speech, divisive gossip, harsh cruelty in our tone, and aimless idle chatter.
But dropping those isn't enough, right?
No, not at all. We have to actively cultivate their opposites. So that's truthfulness, harmony, gentleness, and purposeful connection.
I mean, think about the difference between merely not lying and actively practicing rigorous honesty.
Yeah, that's a completely different energy.
It really is. Or the difference between, not gossiping and actively using your words to mend a rift between two friends.
Yeah.
If you only focus on the negative constraints, you just become paralyzed.
Right, you get rigid. Cultivation breathes life into it. But wait, I do want to push back on one specific constraint here.
Okay, go for it.
The text talks about abandoning idle chatter. Does that mean every conversation we have has to be this heavy philosophical dialogue?
Yeah, I hear this all the time.
Because frankly, if I can't joke around or make small talk with my friends, this sounds like an incredibly bleak journey on this raft.
No, I totally get that. And that's a really common point of friction when people first read this. But the text clarifies that warmth, humor, and casual friendliness are highly skillful, provided they actively build connection.
Okay, phew. So small talk isn't entirely banned.
Not at all. You don't have to walk around delivering profound soliloquies all day long. The line isn't drawn at casualness, it's drawn at distraction and mindlessness.
Like generating social static.
Exactly. You have to evaluate whether your speech is clouding the mind or wasting energy. Skillful speech can be incredibly light and joyful, but it's never careless.
That makes total sense. It's the difference between sharing a quick, funny story that bonds you with a coworker versus just complaining about the weather for 20 minutes because silence makes you uncomfortable.
Right, just filling the void with noise.
But the text doesn't just focus on how we talk to coworkers, right? It takes a very sharp turn inward.
Yes, the internal intercom.
Right, going back to our ship metaphor, if the raft is our mind, the intercom isn't just for external broadcasts, it's how the captain speaks to the crew.
And this is often the hardest part of the entire training. We all have that inner monologue. But for a staggering number of people, the default tone is just brutally harsh.
Oh, totally. Consider what happens right after you make a mistake, or when a deeply ingrained urge arises and you slip into an unskillful behavior.
The inner voice just instantly defaults to shame and aversion.
The self-flagellation is instant. It's this chorus of, you're so stupid, why did you do that? You're broken.
Yeah, we say things to ourselves that we would never dream of saying to our worst enemy.
Let alone a friend.
Exactly. And we do it because we think beating ourselves up will keep us in line. Like, harshness equals discipline.
Which it doesn't.
No. The text points out that harshness just causes an internal mutiny.
Yeah.
You cannot steer a raft effectively if there's a violent fight happening on board.
Right. To navigate safely, you have to actively train yourself to speak to your own mind kindly, like you would speak to someone you deeply care about.
Moving from the internal to the very modern external, though, the raft program introduces this fascinating concept called the digital wake.
Oh, yes. Because today, an enormous portion of our communication isn't face-to-face. It's text messages, emails, group chats.
And because the physical human isn't sitting right there, the natural biological guardrails we have just vanish.
Right, because when you look into someone's eyes, you naturally modulate your tone.
Exactly. You see their micro-expressions, you see if they're hurt. But online, those cues are completely gone.
And a message fired off in a moment of frustration can be screenshotted and reread for years. They leave a really long wake.
A sarcastic throwaway text can harden a relationship instantly before you even realize the damage is done.
So to combat that reactivity, the program introduces the four gates check. And this is a protocol you run through before speaking out loud or before hitting send.
Love the four gates. It's so practical.
It really is. A message has to pass through four specific gates sequentially. First, is it true? Second, is it beneficial? Third, is it timely? And fourth, is it kind?
And the sequential nature is the whole secret. You don't just pick one and ignore the rest.
Right. You filter the urge through all four in order.
Yes. If it's not true, you stop immediately. If it's true but not beneficial, meaning it doesn't reduce harm or help, you stop.
And if it's true and beneficial, but the timing is terrible, like the person is already super overwhelmed,
you wait. And finally, if all three are met, but your tone isn't kind, you still wait.
It's like a radio operator holding off on transmitting during a thunderstorm. You just wait for the static to clear.
That's a great way to put it.
But wait, I have a logistical question here. The text suggests that if a message fails any gate, the answer is silence.
Yes, that's right.
Well, if I'm genuinely upset and I realize I'm too angry to be kind and I choose silence, isn't that just ghosting? Aren't I just avoiding the problem?
I get why you'd ask that.
Yeah.
Because culturally, we equate silence with withdrawal. But in this framework, silence is reframed as profound wisdom.
Wisdom, not stonewalling.
Not at all. It's protecting the communication channel. If your tone is still carrying the heat of anger, forcing the words out will only damage the channel.
Ah, so saving it to your drafts isn't abandoning the relationship.
Exactly. Sometimes the most skillful action is just waiting for the weather to settle. You are actively preserving the possibility of a successful transmission later.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, though. The physical cost of speaking brings us right into the hard science.
Yes, the neurobiology of it all.
Because the RAF program doesn't just say use skillful speech because it's nice. According to the research, lying or distorting the truth is literally metabolically expensive for your brain.
Deception requires an incredible amount of cognitive load. I mean, think about what your brain has to do to maintain a lie.
It has to do like three different things at once.
More than that. First, it has to inhibit the actual truth.
Mm-hmm.
Then, construct a plausible alternative reality. Then, monitor both realities simultaneously while scanning the environment to make sure you aren't getting caught.
I remember once telling a former boss I was having internet connection issues when really I just overslept.
Oh, we've all been there.
And for the rest of the day, my brain was just running this exhausting background program. Did I sound believable? I have to remember to act frustrated about my router tomorrow.
It's completely exhausting, and that exhaustion is literal. You were heavily taxing your prefrontal cortex, which handles complex planning, alongside your cingulo-opercular network.
The brain's error monitoring department.
Right. When you lie, that department goes into overdrive. It recognizes a severe mismatch between reality and what you are projecting, and it consumes immense amounts of glucose.
Which is why the text says, rigorous honesty isn't only moral, it is metabolically kind.
Exactly. When your error monitoring system isn't tracking fake threads, you suddenly have the actual energy required to listen deeply.
And that biological perspective goes way beyond just the brain. The text weaves this together with polyvagal theory, too.
Yes, looking at how our nervous system assesses risk.
Right. Long before your brain processes the actual dictionary definition of the words, your body is engaged in neuroception. It's reading the tone, the rhythm, the pitch of the voice.
It's desperately asking one primitive question. Is this safety or is this a threat?
The prosody. The intonation. I mean, you can say, what are you doing? And it can land as genuine care, or it can land as a vicious attack purely based on delivery.
Our bodies decode the tone milliseconds before our brains decode the text. And when harsh speech trips that threat response in someone else, their cognitive channel physically narrows.
They literally lose access to the parts of their brain required to hear your argument.
Because their body is preparing for a physical battle or preparing to run away. This is the biological reason why that fourth gate, is it kind, is so vital. Kindness is the specific frequency required to keep the listener's nervous system open.
It's just incredible how the biology maps onto the philosophy here. The text brings in speech act theory, too.
Right. The idea that words don't merely describe the world, they create it.
Exactly. When you make a promise or apologize, you are structurally changing the social environment. The Stoics, like Marcus Aurelius, understood this. Speech is either generating friction or clarity.
And the secular Dharma teacher, Stephen Batchelor, provides a wonderful lens for this. He calls it voice.
And voice isn't about rigid rule-keeping, right?
No, not at all. It asks you to show up as a fully relational being, speaking from lived understanding, not just parroting borrowed certainties. You listen, you sense the other person's nervous system, and then you offer the next good enough sentence.
The next good enough sentence. That is such a relief to hear.
Isn't it?
Because realistically, nobody has perfect timing or tone 100% of the time. We are going to mess up. We're going to snap at our partners when we're tired.
Mistakes are a guaranteed part of the journey.
So what does this all mean when we inevitably fracture that trust? How does the RAFT program suggest we fix it?
The program demands what they call a clean repair to keep the hull structurally sound. It's a very specific three-step method.
Okay, lay it on us.
Step one, acknowledge the impact explicitly. Like, I can see that the way I spoke just hurt you. Step two, apologize without defense. I'm sorry I was harsh. Notice there is no but in that sentence.
No but. That is crucial.
Right. And step three, state the change.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a breath before I respond next time.
I have to say, step two is the absolute hardest part. Apologizing without defense goes against every instinct the human ego possesses.
Oh, absolutely.
We desperately want to explain the context. I'm sorry, but I had a terrible day at work.
But the moment you add that but, you invalidate the entire repair. You are reintroducing a threat to their nervous system.
If you're saying you might do it again if you have another bad day.
Exactly. Dropping the defense is the core of the actual training. When you focus entirely on the impact your words had, rather than defending your intent, you shift the whole dynamic.
You turn a painful slip of the tongue into a profound moment of relationship building.
You're proving that their safety matters more than your ego. A clean repair stops tiny ruptures from turning into, you know, resentful silences.
It fundamentally reshapes the architecture of a relationship. I mean, from the internal intercom to the digital wake, right down to the metabolic cost of lying, this whole framework is a masterclass in human connection.
It really is a masterclass.
We want to ensure you know exactly where to find this material. The RAFT to Freedom Workbook is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen. And they've made this incredible decision to offer the entire 66-chapter program freely available online.
It's such a gift.
It is. You can access all of it by visiting rafttofreedom.org.
It's a phenomenal resource for anyone looking to navigate life with more intention. But before we wrap up, I do want to leave you with a final thought from the text's journaling prompts to mull over.
Oh, please do.
Consider one tricky conversation you had today. If you scored it against the four gates, true, beneficial, timely, and kind, which gate did you skip? And how would you rewrite that sentence to protect trust and connection?
That is a brilliant reflection to carry forward. Protect your own channel, always. To close out our deep dive today, we leave you with a quote from the very end of the chapter, written by Ruth Babermeyer. Words are windows, or they're walls. They sentence us or set us free.
So true.
The next time you step up to the microphone, whether you're broadcasting to the world, texting a friend, or just speaking to your own mind, take a breath, check the gates, and build a window.